I never had no complaints. Concerning where I stay. In between you and me, I'm the type of freak that's neat. So I can breathe, even take you with me. Call me Mr. Clean, and I reveal to you.
Man, that's tight, Duran Bernard. And ladies and gentlemen, give it up for this talented artist, Duran Bernard. Give it up.
Yeah, we got that in the budget for you, Duran. We did that just for you.
Okay.
We got that in the budget.
Listen,
we made it enough, okay, Duran? We made it enough
okay.
on the show.
I hear you. How y'all doing?
Oh, we're good. How are you doing tonight? Thank you so much for joining us on the Soul Savage Radio Show. We appreciate
it. I just came.
I just want to start off right. I want to hold you too long. I'm trying to narrow down my questions, and then my co-host Eric EB, he has some questions for you too. But
okay.
I was going to start off by asking. I like to do this thing where I call it like just to get a feel of your childhood music. I guess soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
What's your musical genesis for you? Like, who's the that artist that's it for you? That was like when you first heard them, you were like, "That's it." Like, that's music when you first heard them.
I mean, you know, there's been so many genres of music that I've been exposed to as a kid, from gospel to jazz to like new age stuff that you would like, pure mood stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as an artist that I was able to listen to that got vetted, that was the exception in my household, was Erykah Badu. And that just, because my mother was not having that at all. It wasn't Jesus, it wasn't jazz or something like that, then it wasn't happening. So she was definitely one of the first exceptions in the house, and kind of just kick-started some of what I like to listen to. Of course, there was, you know, Brandy growing up, there was Missy Elliott, you know, TLC, 702, all that you know, all that stuff from the 90s and R&B and whatnot. D'Angelo, Maxwell. But Badu was like that one that kind of got in first, and then everything else kind of followed through.
You know, when I listen to you, I just could tell that you were a student of music, and I love, like, listening to singers that I feel like, you know, like that kind of patent after, like, it's not so much them trying to emulate themselves, trying to sound like the artist, but you could tell, like, just similar, just little nuances and songs, like certain riffs and runs, like you're taking notes. So I wanted to know, was there, like, any part of your journey, like, when you were singing that, when you heard a particular artist, you were like, you know what, I like that. I want to try, that kind of helped develop in terms of your singing. Was there any artist in particular that you, was it still Erica?
One that I can say that, like, really kind of shaped outside of Erica would probably be, he doesn't go by Tone anymore. He goes by B. Slade.
Right.
And when you've heard someone do the things that he's done, you kind of get numb to everything else because it's like, okay, well, what can you do? Because he done did that, plus done took it over here and then built something over there and then was, you know, so it's just the range of colors and dynamics that he has with his voice. Yeah, that would be kind of that one. That's that one, yeah.
Who's your, do you have like a Mount Rushmore of singers?
Let's see, Badu would be there, Rick James would be up there.
Ooh, man.
I would have to put Tone, I'd have to put B. Slade up there, and probably, just for OG's sake, probably Lisa Fisher.
Well, man, that, you can't lose with that right there. That's the, that is an absolute Mount Rushmore right there. Lisa Fisher
I was almost close to saying Phyllis Hyman. But
that's a good one.
When I think about Lisa and I share a duality, and that is we can command the center of the stage, and we can also blend with other voices and not be trying to stick out. Because, you know, just because, you know, not every background singer can command the center, and not every lead singer can blend with other voices. So the fact that I can do both, and I like doing both, because I just want to sing, period. But wherever I can get in, that's, you know, it feels the most right, yeah.
So your mother was a professional music teacher and vocal coach, and your father worked in sound and tour production. What, is there anything that they've taught you that's stuck out to where you still use it today? Because I know it's probably a lot, but is there anything in particular that you, like, constantly use? I mean,
it's a clutter of a lot of things. When you have two musical parents, and by the way, they still do what they're doing. My mom still teaches piano. She still teaches voice. And dad is still out on the road, you know, mixing and things like that. But probably one of the things that my mom used to always tell me was listen to your body. So a lot of times when we would, you know, be performing or things like that, and you feel tired or you feel like you're pushing it, you know, always back off if it starts to hurt. And I always tell, but one of the main things I tell people when they say, like, oh, I have to sing somewhere and my throat hurts, like, what should I do? And I'll be like, shut up. Shut up and drink water. You know, that's your best friend. But rest and all that. So that, and I mean, I just have a keen ear for certain things as far as, like, both of them. My mom being on the piano, and my dad being the one that kind of modifies the sound and makes it sound good and all that. So it's a lot of information that's going on up here. I don't even know which one I use the most, honestly.
So like I guess with like sound, with what your dad does, that would work when you're performing live, and if the sound engineer, the sound guy there, you're like, hey, can you turn this person down, the bass down, or the drummer is too loud, or the piano keyboard is too loud. So I guess that would work there.
Having stage etiquette, knowing how communicate with the band without necessarily saying something, but just certain movements, And that also goes with, and I tell anybody who plays for me, keep your eyes on me at all times. I am the choir. I'm the choir director. So, and I won't lead, I will not lead y'all astray. I won't, just keep your eyes on me. And there's been plenty of times where I've had to like signal for a break and the drummer wasn't looking, and it happened maybe like 2 or 3 times. So by the third time, I literally like would go sing to him, watch me, watch my way, watch me, thank you. You know, it's like, you gotta stay in the moment. Yeah, I will.
It was some show in Dallas. I forgot, it was a Prince tribute. I forgot what year it was, because all my years are running together. You were part of that. And yeah. I remember that happened. I remember you doing that. And the reason why I was like, I think I see the influence with Erica as well, is because she does the same thing. Like, I couldn't believe that all this, what the live performance is impromptu, and that y'all just vibing, basically, the musicians and her and the background vocalist. I was like, wow. And I see that in your performance as well. I wanted to know, what is it, is it like a certain age to where when you're constantly in your craft, that was there ever a time basically like to where you were like, it had to be like, cause for me, I'm a professional musician, and so I didn't feel comfortable saying it until I was like 10 years in. I felt like you had to have, I kind of legitimized, I don't know if it's like the best thing. I was like, okay, I'm 10 years in now, 12 years in now. Have you ever had that point in your singing career to where you were like, okay, I'm finally here, present in my ability to perform and to entertain people?
So I've always been entertaining people, whether that be dancing or doing theater or anything like that. So it wasn't necessarily like I'm here. It's more so, how comfortable am I in where I am, you know? And I am definitely most comfortable on stage. I'm definitely comfortable when the musicians are rehearsed.
I was going to get to that. I had some follow-up questions to that, but I was trying to take, because I have so many questions on that, because I feel where you're going with this. And
yeah.
I have so much on that, because that's one of my biggest pet peeves, is musicians that don't know, that go to rehearsal not knowing the music and try to rehearse during, that's a whole other subject, but.
No, they don't come to rehearsal rehearsing, they be coming hearsing. They hearing it for the first time.
right, exactly. I could go all day on that. That's crazy. But, I was gonna ask, you released the EP in 2016, Soundcheck. I loved it all the way through. And what I realized was that, as you were saying, that you realized that you could entertain, like you've been doing it since you were a baby, basically. You know, you had the parents and the tutelage, the mentorship to kind of hone that skill. I wanted to know, in terms of your the creative process, well, to me, I feel like your concept of melody is like so immaculate, because I've heard that's how you can really tell a songwriter, is their like concept of melody. You're in pocket so much with the song, and it's like, it's crazy, and it's like usually you got to be like 20, like I see that from you know, the Princes, the D'Angelo's, you know what I mean? And you have that already, and you're just releasing, you released like so many great projects. How did you hone that skill as a songwriter?
I guess to just, well, my songwriting style and inspiration came from a few different places. It came from CeeLo Green.
Oh man, incredible.
Who, more so CeeLo when he was in Gnarls Barkley.
Yes.
It's just the way that he has a way with just CeeLo himself telling the story in a way that it can be interpreted in different manners because of how ambiguously the record was written. Case in point, Who's Gonna Save My Soul was actually about the death of James Brown.
Right.
I had no idea. because of how he wrote the song. I took it as something personal in my own life and things that I was going through and all that. So that really inspired me to create songs in a way that they could have various meanings depending on who's listening, and I can still have my story. And I don't mind explaining, you know, these stamps in time that I've documented musically. You know, that's probably the only thing that I like explaining is my music. Myself, not so.
Like I said, that it's only a few people in the tied in there. I know you said you're kind of familiar with the piano, with piano playing. Are you like fully?
So here's the thing with piano, and I'm gonna break this down right now so that I don't embarrass myself later on. My mother was teaching me piano as a kid, and while it was something that I was able to do, it wasn't at the forefront of my priorities. So I just wanted to sing and write. I wasn't really trying to play. So once I moved out to Los Angeles, I mean, by this time I had took such a hiatus off of playing piano, and then I got into a situation where I could possibly teach voice. So I was like, well, I'm going to really need to get on my keys now. So I just got a real good keyboard, and, you know, I would just play, you know, get stuff together. So that way, you know, in the event that a situation like what happened in D.C. earlier this year, where I knew, I felt in all of my chakras that the band was not going to know this music, and sure enough, two of the four were not prepared. So what did I do? I had to just, you know, hey, let me just go ahead and hop on these keys and let me just go ahead and do the shit myself.
He said the two of four. That's
two
horrible.
We're not.
That's
prepared.
Horrible. That is awful. And it was probably the keyboardist and the drummer. Probably. Was that who it was?
Yeah, it was.
Oh my God.
There were two keyboardists. The first keyboardist was the MD. He knew the stuff, and the bass player was sitting behind the MD. He knew the stuff. It was the drummer and the addition and the second keyboardist that were just kind of like, oh, we just got here, so we just gonna, like, you know, like, y'all do know that there are changes in this song, correct? So, yeah.
Okay, we're going to get to it, because I was going to wait for it, but I was like, it keeps getting into the conversation. I'm going to bring it up. I have this thing with musicians. I feel like it's mostly the ones that come from the church, and people get mad when I say this, it's church musicians that frequent doing gigs. They don't know how to separate the two, and what I'm meaning is that they think that jam session is for every purpose. And so they don't really listen to the music that's assigned to them. They'll be like, oh, we're just going to wing it. It's not that difficult, because and they don't understand that you don't get paid to play for other musicians. You get to play for the person that's paying you.
Absolutely.
And that's, most of the time, okay, I just feel bad for, you know, the musicians that come prepared and have it all together, and then you have the knuckleheads. I feel like it's the under 30 club. I might be generalizing, but I feel like, you know, I just feel like it's a church musician thing. I feel like if somebody polled who messes up the most at these gigs, it's mostly church musicians. I just feel like it.
It's funny that you even mentioned church musicians, because, you know, I come from the church. It's very much embedded in my brain, even though I'm not a part of the belief system anymore, but it's churchy. And there have been some times, a couple gigs where, I've sent music in, and it was either my FNF song where I'm doing the Kurt Carr thing at the end of the, I'll be F-free for the rest of my days, or I remixed the Kirk Franklin song Stomp and called it Smoke, and I'm singing about smoking. Right. And there would be people saying, oh, they don't feel comfortable playing this. And I'm like, well, get me another drummer. Get me another keyboardist. Like, I don't care if you don't like the music.
You're getting paid. So if that's not something you can handle, then make room for someone that will. That's just
wow.
the bottom. Yeah.
Sounds like Q-Land well, to me.
You said what?
Listen, I would, he said his name because I,
it sounds
I
like
admitted on this show that I played R&B music in church. That's my goal. I played Prince, Scandalous. I played Erotic City during altar call multiple times. Listen, this is that's part of my makeup. So I'm proud of that. I played Stevie Wonder. I played Too Short. I turned Freaky Tales into a gospel ballad many a time during church service. So. So that's what I'm saying. I feel like I'm up with a Kendrick spirit right now. I was like,
yeah.
All your remixes, I loved all, every one of them. The Earth, Wind, and Fire, the F and F songs. I can't hear Let's Groove any other way but the way you've done it from now on.
Literally, somebody just said that, and they'll be in a store somewhere, and it'll come on, and then they'll start singing my version, and then it's like, oh, my God, I'm painted. And I love that because I was always told if you're gonna, you know, flip a song, you need to make it so good to where the listener is struggling with which version they like the best. And of course, there would be no cover or recreation or parody of the song without the original. So of course, that's never my intent to outdo what's already been done. It's just what's my flair on it and how can I present it to the world with my personality. So that's kind of how I just, you know, approach it. And it's been working so far.
Right. And just like a last question on this, in terms of the musicians and singers things doing, what is it, because I feel like there's like an underlining kind of, you know what I mean, conflict with musicians and singers that nobody talks about, you know, in terms of musicians thinking that, okay, you know, when I get there, I can solo, like, the shedding, like, I'm gonna shed for, like, through this whole song during rehearsal. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I'm not gonna listen to the one that's paying, I'm not gonna listen to the singer, I'm not gonna pay attention to the background vocalist. And then there's also singers that don't know the lyrics and stuff like that, and it's just the way they communicate. Cause musicians communicate completely different, like, we can communicate without using words, like we just give a look, like it's like, okay, we'll put up two or three fingers, like, okay, we're gonna repeat this three times, whatever. What is it you think that's gonna help that communication with musicians and singers getting on the same page to have a good show?
Honestly, it's really just a conversation, you know, and I'm a part of the whatever you, if you didn't do it in rehearsal, don't do it on stage. So if we have a communication about what's what and how we're doing it, like for instance, like when we're in the band and I'm singing with the Baduists when we're doing our thing, and we're doing something repeatedly and we want to switch it up, we have like hand signals that will say, okay, we're gonna put up two fingers, we know which one we're gonna do this time, we put up four. Or we'll be like, nah,
right.
Or, you know, we're not going to do nothing on this part. So we, you know, make a fist or something like that. So it's all body language and making sure that we're in sync with one another. And the more you, you know, here I go again. The more you fellowship with people, the more that you can, the more you understand patterns and things like that. So you know where to, you know, all that stuff. So yeah, I think it's just a matter of communication and also just how much time you spend with one another. I think it's you, I don't know, the chemistry is better when people actually get along and they hang out outside of the work environment. So that's what really creates the relationship. Either that or people have just been working together so long that it's just second nature. So
right.
For us that have been in the band for so many years, unless a show is about to be like we want to do something specific, we don't have to rehearse. Like we just go in and she'll just call out what she want to do. Every show is never the same. So, which is fun for me because it keeps us on our toes. And we ain't never did tracks. It's all live, you know.
Right.
So yeah, but again, just, it just goes into building relationships. That's all.
And speaking of, I was going to transition to you being a background vocalist for, one of the background vocalists for Erykah Badu. The Badu is part of that, background vocalist assembly, with Erykah Badu. I wanted to know, what was that experience, or the time you're doing that presently, is that an ongoing thing to where you take notes of, okay, I'm going to do this at one of my shows, what you do on stage with Erykah, you take it with you when you do your solo performances?
So there's definitely influence from, you know, being with anyone, you know, that long. Especially if you enjoy the show, you enjoy being, you know, in that environment, all that stuff. The main thing that I've really taken away, the couple things is, number one, always enjoy yourself. Always have fun. And, you know your shit, but enjoy yourself. And never take myself too seriously. You know, it's like, okay, if I mess up on a note, you know, it's like, okay, so what? Y'all know I can sing, and this is live. This ain't in the studio. So, I'm a bit more, lax with that. Not necessarily saying I'm just coming out and just doing whatever, but if I happen to hit something that wasn't quite on, I'm like, that's fine. I'm good. Y'all still gonna have fun. Y'all still gonna enjoy yourselves. The other thing that I took from her was, when other people sing my songs, whether they're singers or not, I embrace that, because it's something that that I've created that has inspired someone or moved someone to connect with it, to sing it, or whatever. Now, if you're singing somebody else's song, then that's something different. But if you're singing mine, I don't care what it sounds like. I embrace it. So that's something that I've definitely taken from being on the road with her.
Right. And the Soul Train Awards, the last year's Soul Train Awards, she received the, what was it, Lady of Legend Award? The Soul Lady?
Yeah.
I've watched the performance. I watched the extended one on YouTube, their BT channel. And I was just amazed. I could tell, this, I don't know if it's just the musician in me, but I could fully tell when she said that this wasn't rehearsed, that y'all just go off the rip. I knew that y'all were off the rip, like, cause I was looking at y'all, her drummer, and he kept looking back at Adam Blackstone in the band. I'm like, oh, they're definitely, and they're just bobbing, because Blackstone was the MD for the whole show. And he's just basically taking cues from there. I could just tell. What was that like, getting was that your debut TV performance performing with Erykah?
No. So my first, television debut, was 2011. It was August out here in LA for the UNCF, benefit that BET.
Okay.
And I remember we had just came back from Europe, and I mean just. So they were like, well, you know, because they got her at the last minute, and so they were like, all right, y'all, we're going to do the version of Kiss Me on My Neck, and I was so excited, because that's literally my favorite. That and I Want You are, like, my top two. As far as, like, mid-tempo to upbeat, slow, love me some
right.
Harvest Moon. You know, that shit. But it was so exciting. That was the first time I met Jill Scott, Lettucey, Marsha Ambrosius. Patti LaBelle leaned on my my shoulder to take off her shoes because she said that her feet were hurting.
It was a moment.
just that whole day. Like, I'm just, yeah. So that was my television debut. I don't know why that performance in particular is not up anywhere, but. Yeah, it was a 2011 UNCF benefit for BET, and yep. But then I think the next one was probably the Soul Train Awards.
Soul Train Awards. Listen, what I tell you, I've listened to that performance so many times. It's just probably my favorite, next to Keisha Jackson. Shout out to her, legendary.
Yeah.
That was part of her background vocals, but y'all's harmonies together, it's just the chemistry, the notes, like, it's just there. Like, y'all in pocket, it's, like, everything blends so well. What's it like singing with your fellow bandmates?
You know, what's dope is, so when I came in, there were four of us. I was the fourth one. And then maybe like a year and a half into it, the soprano left. And because I was always singing on her note anyway, I got bumped up to soprano, which I had no business singing up there, but yeah, whatever. So, I did that. And then I think in 2014, Keisha went to go do Outkast. And so,
right.
They brought in, a soprano, and her name is Lala Johnson. That's my girl. Like,
man. Woo.
Yeah. Yo. Love her. Love, and then I think later on that year, I was going to be auditioning for The Voice, and because that was, Erica was trying to get me to do The Voice, and I said, well, I have someone that can be my swing for me, you know, because she was looking for someone that could, like, you know, pretty much do what I did. And so I had someone, and then he ended up joining, and she liked him, and so she kept him. And it was four of us for a second, and then her sister went to do some other stuff, and so it's just been the three of us. And we, like, hang out, like, you know, anytime that we've done gigs in L.A., like, they're always at my house, or, you know, I mean, there's like a friendship. Like, we all text, you know, we check in on each other, mm-hmm. you know, it's not just a, and I love that, because a lot of times, you know, on the road, and I've heard stories, you know, where people, they don't feel comfortable, you know, they're folks
right.
trying to get
right,
fired
right.
or people trying to, you know, it's just not a comfortable environment or something like that. So I'm really grateful that I'm able to perform and work with a group of people that have literally become my family. So, I love them all. Yeah.
Y'all are amazing. I think the baddest background vocals I've ever, like, right now, top five right now, if you ask me. That's just me, being biased.
Okay. Thank you.
You did the show, the BTs had a competition show that premiered during the summer, The Next Big
yeah.
Thing, and
yeah.
I kept up with it gradually. I just kept up with it when I knew you were on, basically. I wasn't, no disrespect. If anybody's from BT listening, no disrespect. I'm just saying, I wasn't really feeling, you know what I mean? Because I like those singers that know who they are, they're confident, that have the stage presence. You have all the above. And so I knew who you were as an artist, and so I tuned in because I was rooting for you to win. And I just, you know, just wasn't feeling. I was like, no, he needs to win the whole thing. Let's just give it. Let's fast forward to the episode and get to Rand. And what I wanted to know was, with that, I know it was an experience. It was a whole bunch of stuff. You have viral moments. You got gifts on the internet. You viral moments you've had on there. But I wanted to know, is there anything from the people that were mentors, the artists that were mentoring on the show that you learned from, or anything about the experience that you like, oh, I could take this back, you know, when I'm doing my own show, doing my own thing?
Right. So the one thing I can say, it did a lot of revealing to me, should I say, about myself. And because I'm a theater kid, and I've done, like, acting and drama and martial arts and all this active stuff, this wasn't anything foreign to me. So a lot of them had never worked in television before. I haven't worked in television per se, or reality television. I have not. But I've done theater, where there are tech days where you gotta, you know, it's a lot of hurry up and wait. It's a lot of stand here so we can get these, you know, our positions and whatnot and all that in theater. So I was familiar with that. So where other people might have been, like, frustrated or, like, didn't really, you know, have the patience for it, I'm just like, oh, this ain't nothing new. Even downright to when we did the episode where we had to run through the gymnasium, I'm like, okay, I know I can run through this. I'm like, but singing, as soon as I'm done, after I'm lit, like, my lungs are, like,
Man, yeah. So
Right.
So that was something else. I'm like, okay, you might need to start. Your daddy been telling you, you need to start running again. So I'm so that was that. And also having a crew shooting a video and all that, like that I'd never done. All my stuff I've done by myself, you know, and even if it was a crew, it wasn't like no big old, it might have been like three people max.
Right.
You know, and I got, and the rest of them, and one of them is my cousin and the rest of them are friends, you know, so it's just,
right.
so to be around that many people running around, you know, and getting smoke and makeup and all that, it was just like, wow, there is a lot that goes on into this. And I know you see it like, you know, making, you know, behind the scenes and stuff like that, but to be in it yourself and you know that like there's a time crunch, this isn't like I'm in my bedroom or this is my house where I'm doing this shoot and I can just take as much time as I need and all that. So it was definitely, it just made me be more conscious about when I go into spaces where I know I'm about to film something, make sure that we know exactly, and I mean exactly, what we are doing and how we want it to look, because I had an idea of something that I wanted to do, and then when I went to execute it, it didn't come out the way I saw it in my head. So now I know that I need to take a little more time to kind of iron out details and things like that when I have, you know, the opportunity to do that again. And I did, which I shot a video for around from the EP right before the show came out, and it's a lot. Like, production is a lot, bruh. Like, it's a lot going on. and I know, you know, because I was a production assistant for Earth, Wind & Fire when I was 16, even though I wasn't really, like, they were more so having me like, Duran, go do this. Duran, go run and do that. It wasn't like I'm filing certain paperwork and, you know.
Right.
It was easy stuff for a 16-year-old to do. But I had a better appreciation for people that work behind the scenes, because sometimes they're the first one in and the last one's out.
Mm-hmm.
So, if anything, the show just kind of revealed to me a lot of things that I hadn't really been putting to use. And maybe it's time to actually, you know, do that, you know.
Right. And I know people ask you this all the time, but I'm going to frame it a different way. If when's the LP coming, your first album, you know, all those questions. But I wanted to know, for you, do you think, like, because I hear artists like D'Angelo, he says that he digs into the crate. I've heard Roger Jerkins in an interview, he says he digs into the crate, you know, getting to the classic music more, to where they can get in a creative space to write or produce it. I wanted to know, in terms of you, if your debut album coming out, what more do you think you, in terms of, do you need more the knowledge of it, dig more deeper into the crate to create it, or do you think you have everything, you know, aligned to where you feel creative, in a creative space to release a debut album?
So I am constantly around creative. Entrepreneurs, you know, freelance, people that do freelance, people who work for themselves, people who are just all those things. And it's more so lyrically, where I draw these things from, just conversations. But as far as music is concerned, I mean, I know so many musicians that bring different, flares and things out of me, you know, and I'm always open for, you know, new sounds, you know, things like that. I'm not trying to stay in one lane per se. I mean, I'm gonna be me, but when we're talking about like musically, I don't know where that could go. I just know that I want it to feel good. I know that the bass got to be eight times out of ten, every song on the album is gonna have live bass. I must.
Oh my goodness! The song, the Check Upstairs, the one we just played, that one right there.
Yeah.
And around as well.
Ellen.
We're gonna play that later in the show. Yeah.
Yes,
Ellen Sandberg played bass on both those songs, and she's just, she has just such a mean pocket, and she just be sitting there just looking all cute and innocent, but Mama B's going in. So shout out
and
to
it, right. And it matches your voice. It complements it very well. It's, I told DeAndre that we had him on the show some weeks ago, and I told him that his acoustic guitar, the way that marriage his voice and the way the bass marriage your voice on record is incredible to me.
DeAndre, so, can I just say that DeAndre is one of my favorite male voices of, like, this new wave. DeAndre, Avery Wilson, Ro James, I love Sir, I love Xavier Omar, a lot of these new guys that I love a voice with personality, you know.
Right.
But like DeAndre, woo, I love that I have friends that we are actually fans of each other's craft.
Right.
That's one thing I'm so grateful for, and I love that, you know. And it's not anything, you know, like I'm trying to kiss nobody's ass, because anytime somebody's ever played anything for me, you know, they're like, you know, what you think? I'm like, well, you know, if I was at the skating rink and this came on, I probably would go to the ladies' room. I'll probably go order my wings, you know, because I am kind of thirsty right now too. So I probably, you know, listen, make me and I'm not saying that it sucks. I'm just saying this is
right.
You know, if I had some wheels on, would this require me to get to the skate floor?
I feel you. I'll pass it to my co-host EB. EB, you go ahead.
Yeah,
Duran, I am a huge fan. I've been a fan of yours since before most of the world, I would say. I think the first time I discovered you was through your YouTube, Alcohol Harmony. And the very first video I saw, you were singing Erica's That Hump. And you were walking around and you were just singing. I mean, like, it was just coming out of seemingly nowhere, you know, to me. And I'm very, very hard on singers, especially when it comes to Badu, because I feel like when most people remake her or try to sing her, they try to emulate her in such a way that it seems like it's just like mimicry, and they're not listening to the song, they're not interpreting it in their own way. And when you did it, like, I felt all of this personality coming through, all of this soul. Is that something that you do with every song you sing?
So, I've gotten to a really interesting pocket with my voice. Because, you know, females, their voices, they complete their development at 25. Men's voices don't complete development until we're, like, almost 40.
Mm-hmm.
So, my voice has gone through some very interesting changes and adjustments, and I've just gotten really comfortable with singing, like, in my basement, and that very present, hefty, you know, tenory bass kind of, like, as I said, I love Rick James, I love Nate Dogg, but then I also love men that can get up high, you know. I love you some Slade, I love Prince, and I'm just a conglomerate of a lot of things, just a sponge, should I say, but also keeping my identity,
right?
Maintaining your identity because when I did my 8th EP, the Stepson of Erykah Badu, after I did that, like, I had to stop listening to Badu for a while, because I was channeling her, what's the word, involuntarily. Where I was like, wow, like I've been listening so much that it's like I'm starting to lose who I am. So let's kind of refigure some things. So I always, you know, tell people, like, there's nothing wrong with the influence, but always make sure that you maintain your identity.
Yeah, there's this, speaking of the male voices, there's, someone asked a question a couple weeks ago, and they were asking, what is it about certain people's voices that is so comforting to them? And, they were talking about men, and the one they named in particular was Luther. And
Luther,
what
I was saying,
like, it's Luther Vandross, there's Glenn Jones, Phil Perry, Charlie Wilson. There is this pocket that they have where they effortlessly just slide into their upper registers, but at the drop of a dime, they could drop it down into their lower register, and you get this nice, deep baritone, but you also get, like, this beautiful tenor. That is something that I picked up that I feel that you have. Like, I hear it. So when you're singing, is that something that you're conscious of, or is that just, like, God-given? Is that just natural?
It's a little bit of both. And more so when I'm, like, recording. So, like, I have a couple songs on the new album where I heard them and I'm like, man, this would have been dope if I could have had Nate Dogg on this hook. And I'm like, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
I can kind of give that a little bit. Hold up. Hey. I can give that. All I got to do is just round my voice. And that's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a conscious thing. Anytime I'm singing Rick, I definitely channel that. But like, if I'm, I have to make sure that I make room for what I sound like, because I don't want people to be like, okay, well, I know what, like, they sound like, but who are you?
Right.
It's both. I give, yeah, yeah.
So I'm gonna say this really quick, and this is just like, I'm just putting this out there. There is a Rick James song called "Don't Give Up on Love." It is my favorite Rick James song, and it, since he's one of my favorites, it's a song I feel that you could do a lot of justice to. Not only because you would get to, you know, round your voice a little bit and play, you know, with Rick's lows, but also because of the way the song is written, there are certain key elements. I mean, I think the song is perfect as is, but there are certain things that Rick did not do, only because he's a singer who knew his voice. He knew his limitations. He knew where not to go, and he knew where to go. But listening to you, I feel that you could elevate that song to the next level, so I'm just putting that out there. Maybe one day we'll get to hear it.
I'm looking up the name now, actually.
You're looking it up. Yes, Don't Give Up on Love. The waters are on the background, and it is perfect. Yes. Where did the name Alcohol Harmony come from?
Oh, bless my heart. So I'll make this real quick. So I was always a stickler about telling the story without telling the story. So Alcohol Harmony was just like my struggle with my sexuality and just my identity. And the harmony was like music and trying to just like not think about it. Or if I could express myself and how I was feeling, I would do it through the music. But it was just a constant battle, and I hated myself for a long time, which is my 30s are a redo of my teen years, because that was some bullshit.
I think gay black men, I think a lot of us can tell that exact same story where our 30s become that redo of the teens, because we did not have the same developmental privileges as our straight brothers and sisters, where we could, you know, be adolescent and we could be teenagers and we could love, and we saw love as something that was more than just sex or more than just a fleeting moment. Like, we didn't see that love could be deeper than that. So the fact that you said that, it resonates a lot with me.
And to keep make sure that you understand this.
Mm-hmm.
Until you are in your 40s, your childhood is an elder of your adulthood. So my birthday just passed on the 16th of September. My adulthood is now a teenager, 13.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting that I'm 31 and my adulthood is 13. And I'm like, now I have a teenager internally on my hands. And I'm like, I just need y'all to be patient with me. Because, you know, there's going to be some, like, emotional and mental puberty going on again.
So I'm excited about it because I get a chance to be in touch with now my inner teenager, who I didn't even know that was going to be a part of myself I would have access to. I was always in touch with my inner child. He is very nourished. He's, you know, well fed. He knows to have his ass in the house. The street lights come on. It's all good. But my inner teenager, I've been waiting on him subconsciously. And, so now it's kind of just that process is about to begin. And I'm just interested to see how I'm going to facilitate that whole thing.
Yeah, it's a constant process. It's just, evolving into, you know, the person that you're meant to be. But the trick is that you never do. You're always evolved. Like, the person is always changing. Like, what you are today is totally different than what you were yesterday, and it's going to be different than what you are tomorrow. And your goals are different. Your, the things that please you, the things that don't please you, that all changes, and they go out of the window. When you met Badu for the first time,
mm-hmm.
What was your reaction? What were you feeling? Was that the moment where you met like a larger than life moment where you met an idol, or did it just feel like I'm meeting my good girlfriend?
So the internet helped ease me into us meeting in person for the first time because we had been communicating via Twitter, and then she reached out to me and gave me her phone number. And so then we were texting like that. Then we spoke on the phone. And then finally I ended up in LA and she just happened to be there. We were in West Hollywood. I think she was at the Pally House, which was a really nice hotel. And my dad took me over there and we parked on the side, of that street, and which was off of Holloway. And I call her and I said, "Hey, I'm out here. I'm on the side." She said, "I'm outside. Where are you?" I said, "I think I'm on the side of the building." And so I'm walking toward the main street. And next thing I know, I see this big hat with all this hair and a brown shirt and some leggings with flip flops just turn the corner. And I start screaming. And then she starts screaming. And then we just run and we just run to each other and just hug, and she gave me a big old kiss, and she's like, I was like, why do I feel like this? We've done this already. She was like, because we have.
That was a very touching thing.
Yes, that was that moment. Like, yeah, man, that was some.
So what would you say? What is one of the invaluable lessons that she has taught you? And it does not have to be about singing or about music, but just as a friend, what's something invaluable that she's taught you?
Jeez. Okay, there's like top three. So the first thing is, do not expect other people to be who you are.
Mm.
All that she gave me when I was 22. Do not expect other people to be who you are. She also gave me an example. She said, information that we give to each other, you know, and how much we give to one another is like, she looks at it like containers, and you pour, you know, you have a glass of juice and I have a glass of juice, and we pour a little bit in the container. And it's like, if you pour all your juice in all at the same time, there ain't no room for them to pour none in there, you know? So it's just about balance. And also, she said, say you go into a store and you buy some $1,100 shoes. You get your shoes and you slam them on the counter and you're like, look, these shoes so bad, I'm going to give you $1,500 for them. You know, and they're like, but the shoes, no, these shoes are bad. They bad. I'm going to give you these shoes $1,500. He was like, now, take your money, but don't expect them shoes to do some extra shit like walk for you.
Mm.
I was like, yeah!
It's hilarious listening to you tell the story, because you actually become her. I hear her when you're saying it. Like, I hear Erica, and it's the funniest thing. Wow. So,
yeah,
you know, to be a fan and then for her to become your friend, I know that's just like such an amazing experience for you.
And you know what's interesting about that? I just knew that as a kid, you know, and I grew up and, you know, listening to Mama's Gun as a teenager and really resonating with those lyrics. And I just knew one day I'm going to at least be able to shake her hand and just tell her, thank you for everything that you've inspired us and all that stuff. No, she reached out to me. And
yeah, you were,
I, and not only did we develop a friendship, but like my family, my mom, my dad, you know, like she just like, I could not have dreamt. So when people say, "Oh, you're living your dream," I could not have dreamt that. That wasn't even. That was the farthest thing from my mind of ever happening. And I'm so grateful for that. Like so great, because I know people have met people that they have, you know, looked up to and all that stuff, and they've had horrible experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just grateful that they, you know, and you know what? Now that I think of it, I don't think I've had any negative experiences with anyone that, you know, musically or whatever that I've gotten a chance to, you know, encounter. It's all been cool, you know, so, but no, this one is special. You know, she was, like I said earlier, she was an exception, in my household growing up as far as music
right.
was concerned. And, it just really came full circle. It's just crazy. And I know a lot of people might, you know, feel like that. I know I'm not the only one because, you know, she knows that she's touched so many people. And I know that she's come in contact with a lot of people that have pretty much had the same thing, you know, but just me being me, I'm just very grateful for just having this experience and doing what I love with one of my favorite people in the whole wide world.
Yeah, you were what I like to consider like that first wave or the first, when people really started making social media work for them. And it wasn't just, you know, we getting on to shoot some shit and play around. No, like you were just doing what you loved and people took notice to that and they helped you to like get in front of her. And, you know, now it's like every day people are trying to go viral for something. Like what
right.
you did,
like, and not only that, but you got like full on productions, lights and HD cameras. Like, bro,
yeah.
I was recording that stuff on a flip video camera.
Exactly.
Okay, nothing embarrassing. And some of them videos were not edited. You saw me put the camera up and then take it back down.
Right.
So it's like I just that's why every once in a while I'll do something that's completely live. Like, you know, I'll just put the shit up and, you know, just to remind people, like, I remember where I started from, and it's nice to have that nostalgic, you know, moment. Yeah.
Yeah, because you still post on your YouTube as well.
Yeah. I haven't really been posting like I should, but more so, I want to have something to say, you know, honestly. And you know, now that I'm about to try to do my best to wrap up all this music, try to drop these singles, you know, get some content out, you know, I really want to get people introduced to who I am today, because a lot of my older projects and mixtapes, it was kind of like old material that I just had on my hard drive, and this wasn't current stuff, so I felt kind of bad that, you know, I was kind of introducing people to all these different expired versions of who I was. So now I can be like, nah, this is some stuff that's been happening literally edge of 20s, 30s. This is current shit.
So. All right, and I have one more question for you. And I like to ask singers this question, especially people who have been on both sides of it. Which do you like better? Do you like blending with other singers, or do you like being in the lead? Do you like taking the lead?
Well, see, how I look at it is when I'm singing the lead, I'm already blending with other people.
Mm.
When I have my situation. So if anything, I would just say I like singing with other people. I love the blends of harmonies and, you know, things like that. I sing by myself a lot. So when I can be around other people that, you know, just catch what I do, or, you know, we can make up stuff, you know, I like bouncing ideas off of. I've worked by myself for so many years, which is why I feel like that was the reason that things weren't going, taken off the way I felt they should, because while the talent is there, the production was not up to par, and the style of how the songs were structured was not going to take me to where I needed to be. And that was just because I was listening to a lot of jazz, you know, so I was styling everything. I wasn't structuring it. So now that I have some melody going on and I can give folks something to remember, it's like, gotcha, I can still say what I want to say, but say it in a way that will get stuck in people's heads. And I have Avere to thank for that. That was he sang background for Gladys Knight. But he's his own artist. He's a writer. He's a vocal producer. He's the one who helped me put together Fly on the Wall, and also soundcheck, period. Like, we got together. He was like, nah. He was like, we need to go with the songs that immediately, as soon as you hear it, it's like, okay, that's it. So he was like, search party got to go on there. Shout out to Ivory Snow. And my bad, Ivory. Yeah, he took the snow off. What else? He also did Check Upstairs. What else? Collide was another one. I mean, just once someone told me, okay, this is how you got to do it, I'm like, oh, okay, that makes sense. And I didn't understand why, like, for the longest, nobody had mentioned that before. But, you know, hey, I think it boils down to, first of all, who says it, and then it's not what you say, how you say it, because not everybody has a way with words and how they can deliver something that you can walk away actually obtaining the information and applying it to your situation.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. Yep. You know, I know you got to go in a few minutes. I want to play. We got.
I ain't going nowhere. I'm at the house all night. I'm about to cook.
Okay. Okay.
What's good?
Okay. Well, we got this game on the show. Since you said we got this game on the show, we like to play. It's called the What's Wrong With You game. It's basically an either or game. I make up the rules as I go.
It's basically rigged.
Listen, don't listen to the engineer of this show, the producer of this show. He doesn't know what he's talking about. This game.
No.
It's basically an either or game. The premise.
Fact check. Listen, no, she make up rules as she go. It is rigged.
Listen, we got too much insubordination going on. We need to listen.
It is rigged.
I'll need you quit. Listen, you're supposed to be on my side. Listen, Duran.
No.
It's an either or game. Let me explain the rules to him. It's an either or game.
Right.
You're basically picking, the either or is basically who do you play more on your playlist. That's basically the game.
Yeah,
who
but she get mad. She gets mad if you don't agree with her.
Well, listen, we gonna play the game real quick. We just gonna ignore the engineer, this insubordination. So the first one is Marvin Gaye or Teddy Pendergrass.
Ooh. Well, I have both in my playlist, but as far as more songs than the other, I'll probably go with Teddy.
There you go. You're talking right. It's like little tricks in here because I make them up as I go. So that was a bonus. So either way, you could have got any one of those right.
Make them up as you go.
It's no rigging going on. Okay, the next one is the Whispers or the OJs.
You said who?
The Whispers or the OJs.
Ooh, the Whispers.
That you talking right. The next one is Rick James. There we go. Yes, that's the jam. Yeah, you talking right. you're talking right on that one. You didn't get that one wrong. Okay, next one is Rick James or Prince?
Ooh, damn. Well, you know what? Because of the information I know, Prince is pretty much the version of Rick James that actually went as far as he did. I'm going to go with Rick.
You talking, listen, another bonus, because either way you could, I feel like they're musically on the same level, because people try to do the Michael Jackson versus Prince. And I feel like it's way more better to compare Rick James and Prince, because they were musically on the same level, musicianship-wise, and artistically, they both were.
Well, more so, Prince was copying off of Rick's style and was trying to do his show before his show, and he got kicked off the tour.
See, I told you. That's what happened.
And then also, Rick was taking Prince's equipment to make his album, the one with "Give It to Me, Baby." The street was it street songs. He used most of that Prince's equipment to make that. So, and then they were taking each other's girl, Mary Jane Girls versus Vanity Six. They were both taking, So they were. It was a whole thing. I read his book, Rick James. The autobiography is crazy. It's amazing.
Oh, I gotta get that.
He said Prince wouldn't give his mom an autograph, and then they were at a party, and he pulled his hair back and poured scotch down his mouth because he thought it was funny. Rick James was coked up. He was on the, he's on a whole other level. You gotta read that book. Rick James
is
amazing.
Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
EB, Whitney, I hear flip. I hear flip.
Yeah, but you got that one right. You acing it so far. You had nothing wrong with you at this point. But the trick of the game is that these next set of questions, you have to answer all these right, or you get a what's wrong with you. It gets pretty intense. And so I'm gonna start it off. Okay, this is specific with Michael Jackson. Off the Wall or Thriller?
Ooh.
See.
Hold on, let me look at this discography real quick. 2 seconds. Off the Wall. Let's get Off the Wall real quick. Right, that has Robert. She don't have to get enough of Off the Wall. Okay, she can't have it. Okay, and then Thriller has David. Ooh, and I want to be starting something.
Thriller. Listen, we need to. Okay, I need you to look at that list one more time.
See, I told you. I told you.
Okay. Just look at Off the Wall.
It's
one
rigged.
More time.
The game is rigged.
It's not rigged.
It is
I'm
rigged.
I'm trying to be. Off the Wall. We got Off the Wall. We got PYT. Wait, no, that's on Thriller. Off the Wall, Get on the Floor. All the jams is on Off the Wall. So you going with Thriller.
A game is rigged. EB, jump in. EB.
I gotta go off of how many spins. Now, don't stop till you get enough and rock with you are dope for an open mic. But if we talking about what I listen to off of this album, it will be Off the Wall. Now, when we go to Thriller, ones that I want to be starting something, Baby Be Mine, which I would never sing in the original key. Y'all got me all the way. human Nature, Pretty Young Thing, and the Lady in My Life. There are more songs on Thriller that I would be spinning than Off the Wall.
So you got more Thriller songs on your playlist.
You heard
it,
man.
Off the Wall.
You
I just need clarification. I'm just asking for clarification. That's
you
all
know,
I'm
asking
for.
It was pretty clear to us.
This is correct. This is correct.
Because I'm looking at the list. Hold on now. Okay.
Listen, I just need a clarification. He said
you heard the clarification.
Then Off the Wall. Okay, you're not going to get what's wrong with you, Durant, but you definitely get a negative 7 points because you're supposed to say,
Off
the Wall. That's just the rules of the game. Off the Wall. Listen, those are personified black gems. Like, Thriller was for the Caucasians. That's why I pick Off the Wall more.
No, it wasn't.
I just feel that way.
Wait. Now, keep in mind, I'm not saying that it's a better body of work.
He's saying this is what he listens to more.
Okay, listen, I can respect it. I just need a clarification of what you listen to in your playlist. It's your playlist. I just needed to know. Okay, you said you listen to more songs off of Thriller. Like I said, you don't get it. What's wrong with you? But you get -7. And so we'll go to the next one. Can we go to the next one?
I'm
ready.
Listen, I'm comfortable with Thriller, okay? That's fine. He picked it. Okay, the next one. Miss Patty or Miss Aretha?
Be careful, Duran. Be careful.
Listen,
here's the thing, and this is just where I am. While both ladies sing their faith, I feel like I will go for Aretha vocally. I will go for Patty the song.
Listen, you talking right. You got it right. That's all I needed to know. You didn't have to preface it. That's more of EB's benefit because he's Team Aretha. I'm Team Patty. So you pick Team Patty. And so nothing's wrong with you on that one. You got it right because that's all I wanted. The playlist matters, okay? We can't be cheating and say, oh, Aretha has more hits than Patty. Oh, she plays piano. Oh, she has all this, the catalog. Different jobs. We're not saying that.
That's a singles artist.
The game is specific.
The game is rigged.
We play more of on your playlist. We get to the truth here. The truth was revealed that Duran Bernard picked Patty over Aretha. Get over it, EB.
The game is rigged.
Nothing's rigged. Okay, the next one is Babyface or Brian McKnight.
It should be an investigation.
Now, is this writing or singing?
No, this is playlist. Who do you have more of on your
playlist?
Definitely a given. This is too easy.
Oh gosh, Babyface.
That's all you talking right. Listen, we got TLC, we got Karen White, we got After TLC, Seven.
We got Tony Braxton.
Listen, okay, if he wins, I'll just on the roll. Okay, this is a bonus. Okay, this is why I flipped the rules. Okay, on this one. This is not playlist, this is vocal. Vocally, who are you picking between Faith Evans
she's trying to cheat
or
right now,
Mary J. Blige? Vocally, who are you picking?
Wait. You said who?
Vocally, who are you picking
or Mary
between
J.
Faith Evans?
let her finish the question.
Faith Evans or Mary J. Blige? Who are you picking vocally?
You trying to be funny.
Who are you? I'm being serious. You don't know how much the topic this is on the show. We've had a full debate on the show on this, and it's gotten pretty heated.
Okay, so here's the thing. Faith, of course. But I will say that Mary has gotten better over the years, for sure. But check this out. Listening to her first live album, she wasn't terrible. Like that was back in the 90s. And I was
absolutely
with adult ears, and I was like, okay, first of all, the band is slamming. These medleys are off the chain. And I was like, Mama is actually like, of course, you know, you got all this stuff and you just like, of course you're going, like I said, I'll be missing a note sometime. Like, so I'm like, but if we're talking about who has more control at the face. Yeah.
Listen,
and it's funny because Mary hates that album. She hates the way she hates everything about it.
She hates everything about the live album.
Yep. That first live album. She hates it. She's listening to it now as a vocalist. She's like, no.
But you know what though? I understand. Because those were her beginning stages. And a lot of times, we tend to bash the demo. But it's like, look, that was the best that you had at that time. So you can't be too hard on yourself.
Ooh, good advice.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So don't. I wrote, okay, so. So the last song on my EP, it's called Insufficient. And a lot of people thought that it was about a relationship. It was, but it was a relationship with my old music, and it was the reason why I took some of my old music down, because I didn't want people to have the opportunity to listen to bodies of work where I didn't know what I was doing. And it's like, no, that's not what I'm doing. So I took it down because I didn't want them to judge that. So, but I had to do another record, which is called Sufficient.
and it's my old music's response to me. And I'm pretty much saying, like, I'm the first process. Like, don't try to forget me and hate me when you grow. You know, like, that was the best that I had. Before there was a master, I was the demo. So, just be a little easy.
That's advice you can apply to any area of life right there.
Like, absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow.
Like, we're so hard on ourselves sometimes, you know, especially as artists, you know, everything has to be perfect and all that stuff. But it's like, look, that's the best that you had at that time. And I think that it was a great effort for her first live album.
Oh yeah. I love it, but yeah.
And, you know, just getting back to that, you know, and I can, like I said, I understand coming from an artist standpoint, but I've also learned how to just be like, look, that's what I had at that time, you know, but look at the growth.
Listen, I've concluded the What's Wrong With You game, and I've concluded that there's nothing wrong with Mr. Duran Bernard, especially when you pick Patty and Faith. Those are the two that's most important to me on that game. So you're talking right the whole time.
Thank you for participating, but it was rigged.
It's nothing rigged about that game. It's nothing rigged about it. Listen, Duran, thank you so much for coming on. Listen, ignore everything he just said. He don't know what he's talking about. Nothing's rigged about it. He don't know what he's talking about. I just want to say, it's artists that, you know, express themselves in an abstract way that I've always been intrigued with, like Grace Jones, Prince, David Bowie, Annie Lennox, Sylvester, Old Dirty Bastard, Scarface, you know, like visually, you know, the stuff he would create with his videos, and then Little Richard, listen to his interviews. I call them the embodiment of musical liberation, and I feel like I would align you with those artists, because every time I hear your music, it's like, okay, this is musical freedom, this is musical liberation, because the way you express yourself vocally is just immaculate, and I just can't wait to hear the more projects. I know you released some on your birthday. You had all the, I have them all stored on my files. I have all of them on there. So I've been constantly listening to it, getting my own musical inspiration and writing inspiration. But I think your piano playing, I remember you saying you, earlier in the interview, you said that you're just being prepared when you're learning the keys and all that for your shows. I think you playing the piano is going to take you musically to like another dimension, like creatively, because it's like artists that play the Aretha, you know, Prince, D'Angelo, Michael McDonald, James Ingram that play the piano. Like, you can hear the emulation of some kind of instrument, like Chaka Khan. Voice sounds like a trumpet or some kind of horn to me when she sings, you know. Rahsaan Patterson, you know, emulates his voice sounds like a horn to me. So I think just your vocal, like you doing that, preparing for your shows, even like if the piano player's not there or they mess up or something like that, not just shows your professional skills, but I think it shows your vocal ability and how it's constantly evolving. I think it's going to take you to like the next level, like vocally, you playing the piano. So I appreciate you coming on, and I'm just a big fan, and I can't wait to hear more of your music. What should we be looking forward to with your projects? Or I feel like you should be doing your own podcast, because you just be dropping gems, on Instagram. Okay. What's going on with that?
Wait. Check this out. First and foremost, shout out to D-Sing Records. Me and my good friend of mine, Chelsea Von Chaz, we are starting a podcast, and it's called YOLO Podcast.
Oh, that's amazing. Oh, my God. Listen, it's perfect for you. I feel like your brand, I think you as an artist, I feel like you're such a renaissance human being. I feel like you can, like, put yourself, like, you're a sound, like, the way you just adapt to anything in terms of you doing the next big thing and doing that, and then also I feel like you do podcasts, like anything you want to do, your fashion, you know, I feel like you know who you are as an artist, so I feel like anything that you put out, I feel like everybody knows who Duran Bernard is, vocally, and just who they are in the, because even with the song, like, the S Nigga Free song, like, when you just switch that up, the Earth, Wind & Fire song, like, even though it's fun and it's humorous, but it's like an in-depth of like just again your songwriting skills. Of it has like a message of self-awareness. Like I hear that in there. Like even with the humor, I can see like the in-depth quality of the songwriting. Like okay, he's talking about being self-aware, and it becomes an anthem because it's like an affirmation. Like you know, I'm not gonna put up with this sorry dude. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like
yeah.
People take it in, and I think the way your ability to do that as a songwriter and just having fun with it, I think that's the quality of not just showing your personality, but the quality of writing. So I
absolutely
appreciate it.
And that's something that I feel needs to, I want to introduce those two sensations where I can make you laugh as well as I can make you, you know, feel things, you know, emotionally. Cause I like making, when I tell you, I really love making people laugh, and I'm actually plotting on doing like a one man show.
Oh, that's amazing.
So yeah, all I would have to do was just figure out what stories I'm going to tell that have happened, and it ain't nothing I got to remember because it's the truth.
Ooh, man!
Wow.
Listen, y'all get it right now for Mr. Duran Bernard. Let the people know where they can find you on social media.
They can find me on IG, Duranbernard.
Love it, love it.
That's a Cleveland coming out.
My grandmother used to say that, and she wouldn't say Christmas, she would say Christmas.
Oh, that's got to be a Midwest thing, because I'm from Oklahoma, so we say it just like that.
Cleveland, absolutely. But yeah, no, just, and the same under iTunes and Spotify and all that stuff, Duran Bernard. Yeah, so, and I got, you know, I have new stuff coming out, dropping hopefully before the end of the year, but album definitely coming soon, because, yeah, I have some interesting tea to tell everybody.
Great.
Oh, I can't wait. But thank you so much for coming on. He has has an EP out called Soundcheck. You can check it on all your digital platforms. Thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it. And also, you know, since you're into mixing the spiritual world and the sexual world, I have a song I want you to co-write called I Go to Church But I Smoke Weed.
Oh, no.
You can co-write that for me.
No. I already got you. It's called Sativa Is a Love Song.
Oh, Lord Jesus.
Listen, you talking right. You hear that Twinkie note? Is you in that register? I need to hear Karen. I need to hear Jackie. Evie says she got a tenor voice. It's so disrespectful, but.
Listen, she holds it down. Literally.
Oh my goodness.
thank you so much for coming on.
And, thank you so much. All right, here's your song. Around.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, folks. You know I love you down. But I can't miss you if you're always around. Yeah. You know I love you down. But I can't miss you if you're always around. There's nothing like a moment to get back to your quiet place. You know I love you down, but I can't miss you if you're always around. Yeah. You know I love you down.
down, but I can't miss you if you're always around. Ooh, yeah.
You know I love you down.
If you